Mr. Walton, did you make contact with Alien? Were you taken to another planet, to a mothership? How do they communicate with... Can you tell me what they look like? Can you tell me how many of them there were? Were you given food?
But the teachers are alive. They're not books. They are the very living essences of nature itself.
What a strange person.
Unbelievably powerful supercomputer that's running our reality, and we don't have a clue as to how to operate it.
So when maybe you or somebody else creates an AGI system, and you get to ask her one question, what would that question be?
What's outside the simulation?
Say in your mind, say to yourself, I am more than my physical body. Because I am more than physical matter, I can perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
Live from New York, upstate near the Great Lakes, it's Lighting the Void, and I'm your host, Joe Roop. Thank you guys for joining us right here live on The Fringe FM, KTLK Digital Broadcasting. Our website for this show is lightingthevoid.com. I want to thank all you guys for joining us wherever you're listening from. The call-in number for tonight is 1-800-588-0335, and that's unscreened. Anything goes. Anybody goes. If you want to support the show, you can go to lightingthevoid.com, click on the Patreon banner, sign up for that stuff. And I'm uploading everything to Vimeo for you guys. I have it, all that stuff. And also, you can make a one-time donation, spread the word, or leave a review. Real quick, I want to say, too, if you want to go to the chat room, you go to thefringe.fm/chat room. That last night, if you were listening to the show, I wasn't doing like a hit piece on anybody or anything about... The discussion we had at the Union of the Unwanted, I wanted to make sure that people understood just how difficult the subject of the occult is and how misunderstood it is. And it was kind of blatantly obvious. Some people understand it from their own perceptions, and some people actually don't understand it at all. That was my whole point, right? So it wasn't like, I got some emails about it, about it being like a hit piece or something. But anyways, just to let you know, yeah, I'm not into that kind of stuff. So I don't know if you guys are actually paying attention, but there's these articles coming out where NASA's actually talking about a warp drive, like a realistic warp drive. I don't want to get into the details of stuff. There's no, I think it's like a red herring. I don't think that they've actually... I don't think they've actually cracked the code on making a real warp drive, but that's what they're talking about. They're saying that it's a real thing. Like warp drive is, are they going to make up, you know what a warp drive is? If you're not a nerd like me, it's like if you ever watch Star Trek and they put the ship in the warp drive and it goes warp speed. They're saying that, they're starting to take warp drive seriously. I don't know about this. This stuff's been out since last year, but it keeps wrapping around on the articles too. So pay attention to stuff like that. Anyways, we're going to talk tonight about the djinn, exorcism, and the occult. It's kind of a scary subject for some, but I think it's very real. And sometimes I believe that we need to ask the question about spirits, right? If you listen to that show, Union of the Unwanted, where, you know, it was like Jay Dyer, a bunch of people were talking, Chris Knowles, Sam Tripoli, who else was there? My favorite person in the world, Michael Wan. We were all talking about that. And if you start getting into things like magic and the occult, Chris Knowles brought up something that I thought was pretty interesting that I didn't really touch on too deeply, but he talked about booby traps in the occult. I do believe in the spirit world. I totally believe it because I've had my own experiences with it, and I know that it's real. I don't know what it is, though. I don't know archetypally what it is. Like, if it's, say, some people believe that it's just the collective unconscious. It's something that's all in our mind. It's something that we make up in our heads. But others that have had real experiences with these things believe totally different. I've had some real experiences with it. I believe totally different. But still, it doesn't mean this show is all about asking the right questions. The show's not about enforcing a belief onto you. So do we all have spirits with us? That's what we're going to be talking to with our guest tonight, Ken Allen, who's coming up after the break. And if spirits or entities can cross over to here to be with us, does that mean that our living spirit can go to the other side and return? Sounds kind of nutty, right? But if you read a lot of spiritual texts, you'll see that there's been like many a stories where people have seen things, they've done things, but they'll even say things like, whether I was out of the body or not, I do not know. It's a confusing place too. And how can we utilize magic or the occult or even spiritual practice for protection and our well-being? And why is the subject viewed, the occult that is, why is it not welcomed in religion? That's a pretty interesting question, because one of the greatest people that I've ever learned from on the subject matter was Eliphas Levi, who was a devout Christian, and a lot of these people were, but they wrote these books in secret, in, you know, behind closed doors, obviously for certain reasons. And sometimes I wonder if even they were using their real names. Arthur Edward Waite, who came up and helped create one of the most famous tarot decks, was a Christian. Paul Foster Case, a member of the Golden Dawn, a Rosicrucian order who later created Builders of the Adytum, which was an offshoot to another Rosicrucian order, was a Christian. So why is it viewed that the occult is not welcome in a religion? When I was a kid, I don't know how many churches that we went to. My father used to take me to churches, and he was real big on the Bible, and he was real big on what the verses literally meant. So if you lied about anything, even if it was about Santa Claus, he considered that a sin. He would say this to me so much when I was a kid: wherever there is a lie, God is no part of it. Doesn't matter if it's a white lie, a beautiful lie, a really bad lie, any kind of lie, God's no part of it. And that became a problem, because when we went to church, my father would literally stand up in the middle of church. Not, you know, some churches have Sunday school, then they have like Bible lessons and all this stuff. This was like regular Sunday church that he would stand up in and ask some of the hardest questions for pastors to answer, mainly Christmas. Why do we celebrate Christmas? Why do we talk about Santa Claus? All this other stuff, if it says in the Bible that God's no part of a lie. Well, asking questions never really worked out for us. The first church we went to was a Baptist church. It was right across the street. And I think, if I remember correctly, I got kicked out of Sunday school for picking up a girl's dress and blowing on her belly. I mean, it's something my grandfather did to me, so I thought maybe the girl would like it. But they kicked me out of Sunday school. That church, my father got kicked out of because he had two big questions, right? Why did we not go to church on the Saturday if the seventh day was the Sabbath day or the day of rest? And what was the big deal about Christmas? Like, he had this thing with holidays. And once he started asking those questions, the deacons and the preachers, or whoever, they would get together and they would literally vote him out. He was called like the black sheep of the church or whatever, because they would quote a Bible verse about something about black sheep, kick him out, which is fine, right? So my father would find another church for us to go to. And it started, I remember one summer I was going to go to my mother's, and I used to fly up to North Carolina to see my mother by myself at 8 years old. I remember I was the first time I was so freaked out because I had to take two airplanes by myself just to go see my mother that lived in North Carolina. This was way before she passed away. But he asked the congregation to pray for my safety. I remember that. I don't really remember where this church was, honestly, or how to get there. I just remember it was like maybe the third or fourth church that we ended up at. But what I learned from all of that, because he would ask these tough questions, is that they didn't like you asking questions. It really didn't sit with me right either, because I had a lot of questions. Even as I grew older, one of the biggest punishments that my father would do to me was my room was tiny. It was probably the size of a master closet, maybe a little bit bigger than that. And if I really did something bad, he would make me go in my room and listen to the old Testament tapes of Alexander Scorby. And I would have to read along and listen. And he would shut the door and make me sit in there and listen to Alexander Scorby read those King James Version tapes. And I would have to read along. And trust me, it was punishment. It wasn't like a fun read all the time, reading the Bible when you're a little kid. But it did, like, I started having questions about certain things that just didn't make sense. Now, that's not to say that the Bible isn't a great text. I obviously believe that, especially the book of Psalms has saved my life so many times, and also using the name of Jesus has saved me on many occasions, right? There's some kind of power there, for sure. What it is, I'm not going to try to get into, because that there's a, you know, religious stuff there. But when you start reading the Old Testament, you start seeing that there's this God who doesn't want you to worship anybody but him, and that is trying to convince you that it's an all-loving God. But if you don't give him the attention that he wants, you're going to burn forever. But I never, you know, like, I never really read it that way either. This was something that the preachers would tell you, that you're going to burn in hell for eternity. But when you would read the book, it talked about the lake of fire, all this other stuff. Now, as I got older, I started realizing, well, what is hell? What is this symbol about? What are these places the Bible's talking about? Because if it's a metaphor for something, then it really makes sense. But literally, I can't see how somebody would love me more than my parents, but would hurt me that much just because I didn't love them. It didn't make sense, is what I'm saying. The idea of the word occult just means hidden. And I believe that even in biblical texts, and I'm not certain about this, but I believe that there are a lot of hidden gems in there, a lot of mysteries, a lot of metaphors, and a lot of things that need to be uncovered. We should be able to ask questions if there's a spirit realm. You should be able to protect yourself. And if there really is a spirit realm and there are things that are happening to us or things that are happening around us, we should know about it. It shouldn't be kept hidden from us. We should seek these things out. And something we really didn't get to talk about on that show at the Union of the Unwanted, but what about how these entities or whatever, how they, and I've had personal experience with this too. I've told you guys this story, how they can like come into your dreams or even into the astral realm or mess with you in that sense. Now, the government's already doing an experiment with people's dreams and auto-suggestion and things like that, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about real, like, shadow figure-type beings that I've seen in my dreams. Beings that I've seen standing over my face 4 inches in front of my face, trying to wake up from a false awakening. Things that just don't make sense. And even in Robert Monroe's trilogy books of Journeys Out of the Body, which I bring up constantly and for a reason, if you haven't listened to or read those trilogy or that trilogy, you need to. You need to. Some interesting stuff in there. But he would run into the all kinds of different beings in this realm. I'm talking about parasitic beings, beings that he couldn't see but could hear, beings that didn't speak that he could communicate with, forms of communication and even commerce, all kinds. It was like a whole other world. It's a whole other world in there. Whatever this place is. But when you read other texts besides religious texts, you start learning about the hierarchy of angels, the hierarchy of demons, things that are called jinn, which go way back, that are ancient. And the more you read outside of your religion, the more things start making sense. Even the story of Christ and who he really was and what he came here to do. It starts making sense. It starts making more sense. At least in my head. So I go back to that question. Why is it viewed that the occult is not welcome in religion? I think it's because of fear. And a healthy fear at that. A fear of playing with fire. A fear that if you start delving into the spirit realms on your own without the protection of the church or Mary or Christ or whoever that you want to believe your God is, that you're going to run into trouble. And honestly, I don't really care like what you call God. There is some truth to that, I believe. I don't care by what name you call God is what I'm saying, but if you don't have some kind of faith in a higher power, it doesn't work, right? It doesn't seem to work. You don't seem to get the protection you need and weird things happen to you and a lot of things fall apart. Someone's talking about that they believe Jesus left his body during the crucifixion. Well, also his body came back too in the story. Like they could actually touch him. Anyways, we'll get into that with our guests. We might talk about that, but I guess the big question is why is there so many laws in religion? Why can't you ask certain questions? There are like non-denominational churches and things like that I've been to that will just simply, they'll let you ask questions and talk all you want. But the deeper you go into like these denominations that go way back, you can dig into Methodist, like Catholic, Protestant, big heavy type, you know, systems that go way back into the medieval ages or even deeper, almost clear back to Greco-Roman almost. But these people have traditions that they will not budge from. It's like a safety net, right? Anything outside of that, it's like, oh man, that's bad news. You don't want to mess with that. Well, how the hell are we going to get any answers to these questions if every time we turn a corner and something that scares us that we don't know about, we just don't go down that path. We don't go down that road. We don't ask any questions. We don't try to figure it out. We don't even try to see if it's worth even being afraid of. There are hidden gems, even what I would call hidden, if you want to say the word occult, that's fine, that I believe that are in the biblical text too. Things that get overlooked big time. I personally believe that Christ was like the master, one of the master magicians of the planet that ever walked, ever lived. Son of God, sure, but we're all children of the source, the creator. And isn't it funny too, like when you go and you sign up to Freemasonry, they'll let you in there and vote you in, but you have to believe in a higher power. They don't really care what you call God. They just want to know that you believe in a higher power. Like I told you guys, and I told those other guys on that show, I took this journey. I went into all these different places. I checked it out. I learned some beautiful things. But at the end of the day, it's all what Manly P. Hall calls exoteric, right? The real mysteries are not in the temples and the lodges and everywhere. These are just exoteric symbols of the real mystery school, which lies inside you, in that realm where we all connect, in the collective unconscious, the spirit realm, the astral realm. That realm is where all of the good stuff is. But a lot of scary stuff too. You guys should really listen to some of the stuff that Robert Monroe talks about that he ran into. And he wasn't really a religious man at all. He was just doing this as he did the out of body experience in a scientific way. He took notes. He came back, tells you what happened. He tried to several experiments to eliminate variables and keep constants and trying to find patterns. He was really digging for the truth. But he would run into these beings that he talked about how they didn't really have a name. Like some, they even was called the One, and he would have to lay on his back and let whatever the hell this thing was, like, crawl over its torso or his stomach. And it even took a person once, and he knew that he couldn't question it or he shouldn't move. It was almost like he was trying to hide in this realm because most of the people that were in this realm were dead. But he was still, his body was still back in his bed. It's some really, it's a crazy book. I listen to it every year. Every year. Because I always learned something new or something that I looked over. We haven't talked a lot about the jinn or spirits or exorcism on the show. But I think it's time that we do that. Our guest, Ken Allen, who's going to come on, is going to speak with us about this. So my big questions for tonight is, do we all have spirits with us? Are they walking with us all the time? Are they around us all the time? And if spirits or entities can cross over to here to be with us, does that mean that our living spirit can go to the other side and come back? I believe so. But that's still a good question, right? And how can we utilize hidden stuff for the occult for protection and our well-being? And why, I think the final question is why is it viewed that mysteries, hidden things, the occult, all this stuff, why is this not welcome in religion? Big questions for tonight. Calling number, we'll leave the phone lines open the whole night. The calling number is 1-800-588-0335. We'll be right back with our guest, Ken Allen. Stay with us. More Lighting the Void coming up.
FM listeners, did you know that when you're on the road with limited data or no Wi-Fi available, you can still listen to every minute of the Fringe FM by calling 701-719-3971. No smartphone, app, or internet needed. Saves your data plan and no extra cost if you have unlimited minutes. Call 701-719-3971. That's 701-719-3971. Listen to the Fringe FM on any phone, anytime, anywhere.
I want to thank you in advance for your support.
Visit thefringe.fm/alchemy research and enter coupon code Fringe and receive 15% off anything and everything on the website. That's thefringe.fm/alchemy research. And thank you for doing your part and keeping alchemy alive in the modern day.
right, welcome back to Lighting the Void. Hey, I want to mention too on the network on at fringe.fm, we got a new host that you guys, probably some of you guys have heard of, Tony Merkel from the Confessionals podcast, and he's also going to be doing a radio show called Rage Against the Dystopia. Really cool guy. I've gotten a chance to get to know this guy, so make sure you check out his show and all the other shows too at fringe.fm. All right, so we're going to get dive right into the subject with our guest. Ken Allen is here with us, and you can check out his podcast called The Wizard's Table. It comes on every other Saturday at 6 p.m. from RU Media. And a little bit about Ken. He's a professional occultist and exorcist that has been a practitioner of the ancient arts of magic in one form or another since the age of 11. Ken is a ceremonial magician practicing Solomonic magic, grimoire-based magic, and invocation, as well as evocation magic. And Ken practices rune magic, house blessings and cleansings, and working with the archangels Raphael, Michael, Gabriel, and Ariel for blessings and protections against dark forces and helping trapped spirits to cross over. And thank you so much, Ken, for coming on the broadcast, man. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
So this is a pretty heavy subject. I actually was on a panel the other night talking to a bunch of guys about the occult, and I really wanted to be on there because it's so like demonized and misunderstood. But at the same time, when people talk about, you know, how there's some danger to it and booby traps and things like that, I totally agree with that too, because I've had some pretty heavy experiences with it. I one of the biggest questions I always ask any occultist or practicing magician when they come on the show is when someone says that the occult is dangerous, would you agree with them, or how would you answer that?
Yeah, I would agree with it. It can be very dangerous, especially if you have no experience. You know, I mean, I've been practicing magic, like you just said, you know, since I was 11 years old on my mother's side. A lot of Sicilian folk magic is how I got started. But yes, it can be dangerous, sure.
Yeah. Okay, see, and that's how you know you're getting the real
learning
answer.
Techniques like the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, things like that.
Yeah. So, the last time that I talked about the djinn, which I want to let you kind of explain the djinn, but the last show I had about that was with Nineveh Shadrach, who he was explaining to me, and maybe you can confirm this, that a lot of the paranormal activity that we see on the earth, most people blame on demons or spirits. He said, but a lot of it, especially some of the real heavy stuff, comes from djinn, because he said that djinn were one of the only, or not the only, but most powerful types of entities that can influence the physical realm. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Yes. I mean, look, you can, and you do have demonic infestations and hauntings, but the djinn are extremely powerful. They are more like us than a demon or an elemental. They actually live in a parallel universe. They have families. They love one another. They have culture. They have extremely lengthy lifespans, thousands of years, but ultimately they do die.
Are they referenced actually in the Bible? It seems like when you just read regular religious texts, you don't really read a lot about djinn. It's just either angels, demons, or the devil, or God. Where can you find info about them?
Yeah, you can find a lot of reference to the djinn in the Quran. The Quran mentions a lot about the djinn. In fact, the shayatan, the Satan, was a type of djinn who rebelled against Allah because Allah wanted him to bow down to human beings made of clay, whereas they are made of what's called smokeless fire.
Interesting. Very interesting. So,
and my theory on smokeless fire, and it's just a theory, is possibly plasma based life form.
Which we've kind of seen a lot too. People have had several different, several accounts and witnesses of things like that. Honestly, where people, oh, it's a UFO or it's an orb. It could have been a djinn, right? It could be.
Absolutely.
You never know.
Definitely. Stardust Ranch. I don't know if you're familiar with that place or not, but that's a great example.
Yeah. Actually, I am. I'm more curious about your story because you said you've been doing this since you were 11. What was one of your first experiences with the djinn? Like how, when you first realized, well, oh man, these are real. This is real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was around 6 years old. And everyone assumed it was an imaginary friend, but to me, he never was imaginary. He was just always there. The first time I saw him, I was probably 6 or 7, and he wasn't very tall. He was kind of short, and he had 2 horns on top of his head that came out of his forehead and went to the back of the base of his head, like 2 cornrows.
Wow.
And I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and it didn't frighten me. It didn't freak me out or anything, because he had always been there as I was growing up. And when I became of age to be conscious enough to recognize him and understand what he was, I just felt completely comfortable.
So you didn't really have a scary experience per se.
No, it never really frightened me. In fact, me and him got into a verbal confrontation one time and called each other names, and he's been with me ever since. In fact, I found out that he comes from the ancient city in the Middle East called Baalbek.
Huh. So you're saying that you were born with the ability to see into the spirit realm. Was this like the only thing that you saw? Or was it just him, or did you see other things?
This djinn, for me, has been the only thing that I have been able to see, although I can sense the presence of spirits, human and non-human.
Interesting. And what form of magic do you practice all kinds of different magic, or you just stick with ceremonial magic, or what form of magic do you practice?
Well, yeah, I really love folk magic. Ceremonial magic. And I actually combine the two. I like the ebb and flow of that. So Solomonic magic is a foundation. Even chaos magic. I get into chaos magic a little bit. A lot of people laugh and scoff at it, but chaos magic works. It's powerful stuff.
Yeah. The whole thing about chaos magic too is like it's the modern form. I mean, if you're really into manifesting stuff and using what works, that was what they based their whole system off of, was let's find out what really works, you know? I like chaos magic too, but I don't practice it very much. I kind of just stick with, I stick with prayers and the angels like you do too, but I also kind of realize that some of these angels, just because they have the name angel, it doesn't mean that they're exactly nice, you know?
Absolutely. Definitely. In fact, I've had to, banish an angel one time. I can tell you about that if you'd like.
Yeah. Tell me what happened.
So there was a local Catholic church. It had been a Catholic church for 50, 60 years maybe. And for whatever reason, it closed down and it was converted into a home, and a family was living there. And so I went in to investigate, because they were having some paranormal activity. Things were being moved around, poltergeist activity, knocking noises, books flying around, people getting touched, not harmed or scratched or bruised or anything, but just getting touched. So what I did was I got into a semi-trance state so I could meet the entity on the spiritual plane. And I found out it was an angel that was basically angry because it was no longer a church.
Ah.
So I work with a daemon called Ouroboros. In the Goetia, he's the 55th goetic spirit. I called him in, and me and him worked together to remove this angel.
That's so, like, you know, just some people hearing that would say, okay, so you got rid of an angel that was trying to keep a church going with a demon. That would make you an evil devil worshiper. You know what I'm saying? Like people would say that that's what you are because you did that.
Right. Yeah. A lot of them would think that. No, I definitely do not worship the devil. I do not work with any entity called Satan. You know, that's just not part of anything that I do. I practice magic. I help people that have problems with hauntings and spirits and things of that nature. And there's no devil worship at all.
And so you also do perform exorcisms too, correct?
I do. I have performed exorcisms to get rid of demons. I am an ordained Catholic priest with the Independent Sacramental Movement, so I've done Roman Catholic style exorcisms.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's really cool. Catholicism, that's what I was trying to explain to at the beginning of the show. Like, some of my favorite authors were Catholics, or even in the church, Agrippa, Eliphas Levi, they talked extensively about the church and Catholicism, but it's kind of like behind the scenes, they wrote books about the mysteries. I'm sure you're familiar with both of those guys, but
I am.
And there's
a lot of mysticism, and there's a lot of magic, especially in Catholicism. When you go to Catholic Mass, it's a very powerful thing. That is high magic.
Yeah. Yes, it is, actually. Yeah, it's a ceremony. It's high magic for sure. That's kind of what freaks me out about it, because once you really start understanding how ceremonial magic works and how it affects the psyche and the spirit, and then you go to a Catholic Mass or something, you're like, whoa, this is just a big magic ritual, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can see all the symbols and the colors, the smells, and everything they're doing to the psyche. It's not a bad thing. It's like, at first I thought it was bad, because it's like, oh, they're not telling people about it. But at the same time, I mean, some people find a lot of peace there too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, with all types of magic, whether it's ceremonial or, you know, hoodoo folk magic or whatever, European folk magic, the candles, the incense, the oils, the sounds, the smells, all these things are conducive for creating an environment for you psychologically to make the magic happen.
So the question that I asked in the beginning that I'm curious about, since you've obviously got a lot more years of experience at this than me, is, do we all have spirits that travel with us all the time? First and foremost,
I absolutely believe that. Yeah, I absolutely believe that. And I think it's different for different people. You know, some people have celestial beings like angels that are with them. Some people have jinn that are with them. So some people have strictly ancestors that are with them. I happen to my spirit happens to be a jinn. And he can be dark. You know, it's been confirmed that he's a darker jinn, but not necessarily evil. Just because something's dark and scary doesn't make it evil.
Yeah, right. I mean, we all have our dark and scary moments too, but it doesn't mean we're evil people, you know?
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's right.
So, during your practice of doing all this stuff, Ken, did anything ever scare you? It doesn't seem like, you don't sound like a kind of guy that gets spooked too easily.
Well, no, not really. I don't think, to the best of my knowledge, I really don't think I've ever had any frightening experience. And I think it's because I've been exposed to it so young. You know, I started working with my grandmother and my great-grandmother, who were both Sicilian and practiced Sicilian folk magic at around 11 years old, and just been doing it for so long. Yeah, I've seen some very wild things happen during some of the exorcisms I've performed. But when I'm in that mode and I'm in that moment and I'm saying these prayers and I'm having this faith, not only in a higher powerful being, but faith in myself as well, because that's important, it doesn't seem to bother me.
Huh. So did you ever see like spirits come out of people's body, or people, you know, how they have in the movie, were they talking a different voice or anything like that?
Yeah, I've seen that happen. I've seen an elderly lady one time. She would speak. It was like two voices at one time, a deep guttural voice, speaking Latin. The same woman was thrashing about wildly. Her face was contorting horribly. She threw up what appeared to, it looked like seaweed.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah. But the biggest thing was the changing of the voice. That was extremely intense. I mean, you could feel it in your body.
And what do you usually use to protect yourself in those situations? The four archangels?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the four, I call on the four archangels. You know, the Virgin Mary is extremely powerful. A lot of demonic entities fear the Virgin Mary more than anything. So the archangels, the Virgin Mary, holy water, holy icons, a blessed St. Benedict medal, a blessed crucifix, a blessed rosary. And see, these things need to be blessed because otherwise they're just objects. And a lot of people don't take that into consideration and realize these tools have to be blessed. Even in magic, even in occultism, your tools should be blessed.
Yeah. How do you think that, I mean, I'm curious, why do you think that works? Like say, because I read Dionne Fortune, how she talks about psychic self-defense, and she talks about how to make your own holy water. And it was one of the first things I learned to do. Right. But I'm curious as to kind of like why that works. I mean, because to an outsider, they would be like, well, it's water, right? I mean, why is it blessed?
Right.
But something does happen for real when you may do a prayer over it or bless it, or I guess you can say invoke a spirit into it or something. I wonder, it's very hard to explain, I know, Ken, but how does the water change? Yeah. I mean, what happens? Is it just the energy that changes, or what happens in that moment?
Yeah, I think a lot of this stuff does come down to energy. It's a spiritual alchemy. You know, it's that kind of a process. When you're praying and you have faith, it doesn't matter if you have faith in Ronald McDonald, if your faith is strong enough, it's going to take on that spiritual change.
Yeah. So you're saying based on people's faith, their beliefs, like someone says a prayer, and they use, because I always believe this too, right? Because I grew up Christian. So, a lot of that stuff works for me. The angels, the names of God, things like that. And I have faith too. So that itself is energy, like this massive belief inside of us that we focus on an object actually blesses or puts energy into that object.
Absolutely. It's like if I create a sigil, okay? If I create a sigil and I have faith in what I'm doing and I chant over that sigil, or I meditate on that sigil as I'm drawing it, whether it's with a pencil or a paintbrush or whatever, I am imbuing that sigil with a part of my power and my faith because I know it's going to work, and that sigil damn sure work.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I know earlier you mentioned the saints, and I learned this from Gordon White. Like I didn't grow up Catholic at all, but I was always kind of fascinated by Catholicism. And one of the things that he taught in his school was using the saints as, like he had this deck of cards that had all the saints in it, and you can invoke this energy of the saints for certain things. And I always thought, man, why does that work? And then I kind of fundamentally understood that, well, if you take, for instance, like, I guess St. Pete or whoever you want to use, if enough people believe that a person was a saint, and that all of these people put their energy into it, then it becomes like an archetypal egregore, right? I'm trying to find out why it works for some reason in my head, but if you think about it on an energetic level, if enough people believe this person is a saint, even if it goes back into history, well, in the astral realm, or that place where we're all connected, that saint, that picture, that symbol has power, right?
Absolutely. I agree with that 110%. 110%. I mean, look at the Baphomet figure. Okay. Yeah, when it was originally created, you know, from my studies and my understanding, it's basically like a glyph, a sigil, nothing more. It represents earth, air, fire, water, wisdom, all things occult, as above, so below, et cetera, et cetera. But so many people have come to work with it that the Baphomet figure is now an egregore, and people actually interact with it. Unfortunately, the Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan have perverted it and made it into something evil. But truthfully, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. I told people
it does. It does kind of look. I mean, don't get me wrong. It does kind of look creepy, but it's really not.
Yeah, the original symbol of Baphomet was in the History of Magic, the book Eliphas Levi wrote, and the original symbol of Baphomet that that he had and the one that they have now, especially the Church of Satan, it's like they literally are. And even in that show, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, you know how they kind of put that Baphomet figure in that show with the statue and the little children and stuff? It's like they're...
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's like they took something that was really cool that represented a lot of different mysteries and hermetics and all kinds of things and turned it into this devil figure. And now that so many people believe that that's what it is, people don't understand that they can change things like that. They can literally make it into that.
It takes on a sinister energy. It's like the inverted pentagram versus the pentagram with the point, you know, straight up. Okay. So sometimes it depends on what I'm doing. If I want something spiritual to manifest in the physical realm and I want it to anchor it and I want it to work quickly, I will use an inverted pentagram because that represents spirit becoming matter, spirit manifesting in this physical realm. If I'm using it with the point up, that is me having an influence on what I'm doing physically into the spiritual realm. Again, it goes to the as above, so below. But the inverted pentagram is not evil. Again, that's the Church of Satan's foolishness.
Yeah, and even I've seen these glyphs too on the Tree of Life where they show that where, you know, that they flip the pentagrams back and forth, you know, because the tree or the lightning flash, it kind of shows how things manifest into physical reality or here on Malkuth in that sense, right? So that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But how do we, like, especially now that the occult is so, I don't know, it's so viewed upon as like this devilish, evilish thing in all the movies, magazines, I would say conspiratorial shows, etc. Is that not creating a dark energy around the occult? Doesn't it seem like we're constantly fighting that?
Yeah, for the masses, those that aren't educated about these things, absolutely. Hollywood's done a terrible job of putting it in a dark light. All things occult. I mean, Sabrina's a good example of that, you know, just to name a few. So yes, Hollywood cinema. Yeah. They've really done a job. Mm-hmm.
What a shame. Yeah, it is a shame too. And I mean, some beautiful reading right now I'm reading, Robert Wang's book on the Kabbalistic tarot. I think it's a good book. What types of things did you learn to do over time? Like, were you able to come out of your body? Were you able to actually see angels? That's something I've always wanted to do I'm pretty sure I've had a couple angelic encounters in my life, but I'm not so sure they weren't just spirits at the same time. But I wonder what types of things you've been able to do, based on your studies.
Yeah. I've astral traveled. I started out, what I do is I basically use a hand drum and I'll beat a hand drum monotonous, 220 beats per minute, very monotonous. And that puts my brain into like a theta state. And that actually allows my consciousness to leave my body. So I have been able to see spirits in that state. I have been able to travel to my mother's house, watch her watching television. I have been able to do things like that. The first time I did it, it was very strange because it was as if I could feel myself moving out of, I can't explain it. If anybody's ever done it, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about, but you can almost physically feel your consciousness moving out of your body. And I'm drumming the whole time. And when my consciousness leaves, muscle memory takes over. I'm still drumming, but my consciousness isn't there. My body's just acting on its own.
I've done that from a sleep state, doing that wake to sleep thing and feeling the vibrations of the body and then coming out of the body. But mm-hmm. I've never done it like from a waking state. I've never been able, at least to this point, I haven't been able to meditate to a waking state and slip out of my body. What I have done is got to a certain spot where everything just disappeared, where I literally became like blind. I don't know if that makes any sense, but where things just start disappearing on you, you know.
What I like to do is I like to burn a little bit of mugwort, and I like to drink a little bit of mugwort tea, because mugwort helps to open your third eye, and it helps to facilitate astral travel.
That's something you're the first person to tell us that. Interesting. Yeah. Cause the astral realm is the most fascinating thing to me about everything that we talk about on the show. You know, for me it is.
Yeah. I have communicated with a lot of ancient energies, consciousnesses in the astral realm, more so than in the everyday waking state. Again, you know, that's how I was able to make the confirmation that that was an angel aggravating those people, not a demon or not a djinn.
All right. Very interesting. We gotta take a break. We're already at the top of the hour here. Look, we can take your questions in the chat room as well. I want to get a little bit more into discussion about the djinn, also exorcism too. I know you guys want to hear about that. We'll be right back with Ken Allen, and we're talking about the occult tonight. Stay with us.
This is No Way Jose, a Northern California Piscean stuck in the Arizona desert. I'm a void walker, and I got the shoes to prove it. So what do I do when my soul yearns to delve deep into the realm of the unknown? I aim my satellite straight into the night sky and catch a smooth ride on the KTLK-DB radio waves. I tune into Lighting the Void with Joe Roop on the Fringe FM.
Joe, Lighting the Void is the best show on the planet. This is Barney, your friend from Facebook. Thank you and all the crew for all you do. Namaste, my friend.
This is Macon from the foothills of North Carolina, and I am a void walker.
G'day, void walkers. This is Lily from down under Australia. The world may be small, the enigma is greater. So let your curiosity take you for a journey with Joe Root.
Hey, this is V, coming in from Central Maryland, and I am a void walker.
This is Kevin Dougherty, a beginner void walker. I'm from Vancouver, BC. I know a little about a lot, and as Leonard Skinner said, I guess the rest. I learned a lot from Mr. Roop and the show. And I heard it from the beginning. I knew right then he was going to be a New York pal. Thanks for all your shows, and keep it up.
Hey, this is Derek from Mass, a.k.a. the Night Stalker, and I'm a void walker.
This is Mark from Chicago, and I walk the void to ascertain what is consciousness.
My name is Jared Johnson, and I'm from Humboldt County, California. I do not know all the answers to the questions about reality. I do not claim to know the ultimate truth about life. I seek that which has been made hidden as a part of a family of explorers of consciousness. I'm a void walker. Thanks, Joru.
To Lighting the Void. Our guest tonight, Ken Allen, we're talking about djinn, exorcism, the occult, and a little bit of folk magic too. If you want to go to our website for the show, it's lightingthevoid.com. The network website that we're live on right now is fringe.fm. It's just fringe.fm. Go check it out. Download the app. Also, if you want to call into tonight's show and speak to our guest, it's 1-800- 1-800-588-0335. 1-800-588-0335. Ken, I really appreciate you coming on the show to speak to us about this, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on.
It's not easy because I'm sure you know by now that a lot of this stuff is, it's really not looked upon in the greatest light all the time. And I have my own battles with that I want people to see, especially in the conspiracy realm. Not only how is it used against you in your life, but how you can empower yourself with it too. It's just hard because maybe you can relate to this. The second I start speaking about it to people, it's almost as if I'm teaching them to, in their eyes, do dark or evil things, right? You get where I'm coming
Absolutely.
From.
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. A lot of times when people find out, the first place they go is devil worshiping.
Right.
And that's the furthest thing from what I do. I don't do that. Yes, I will admit, I have. And I do work with demons, but I do it in a very professional and controlled environment. I work with the djinn. I sometimes work with the ancestors and other spirits of the dead, as well as angels. But that doesn't mean I'm worshiping an entity of pure evil. That would be ludicrous. That would be insane for anyone to do that.
Why? Well, I think a big question that I think a lot of people might ask is why, Ken, why would you work with demons if you have angels to work with? Like, what would be the purpose of even,
sure,
I guess, invoking a demon?
Sure. Yeah. Sometimes angels just refuse to do it. You know, whatever it is that I need done, magically, sometimes an angel just won't do it. They're very stubborn like that, whereas a demon will do it, or a djinn will assist. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's really that simple.
And do you have to cut deals with the demons? Do you have to sacrifice something? Or?
No, there's no animal sacrifice. There's no selling of your soul, anything like that. See, my experience, I work a lot with Ouroboros. I mentioned him earlier, the 55th. Goetic spirit, in the Lesser Key of Solomon. He likes sangria. He likes Di Serrano. He likes, mead, specifically a mead called Viking blood. I have been known to put a couple drops of blood in there. But there's no making pacts to sell your soul. There's no killing animals. There's none of that foolishness. It's just not necessary. And some of these entities want to work with you because when you put them to task, especially for something of a positive nature, it helps to elevate them. It helps to elevate them spiritually.
Interesting. What do you mean? Like, it helps them to, I mean, if we're talking about the hierarchy of spirits, are they imprisoned in some type of sense? I think a lot of people believe that, like they're in the, because what I've read is there's a hierarchy from the archangels all the way down to the very bottom of the Klivov. You know, you got your demon kings, and then you can just keep going down. But are they trapped by these hierarchies, or are they imprisoned?
I don't think they're imprisoned, but I think that they are trapped in the sense of their masters control them. Piamon, for example, is a demon king.
Right.
Lucifer is a demon emperor. So the guys underneath them, you know, they're at their beck and call.
It's like isn't it?
But none of them are truly trapped.
Yeah. Isn't it like what
but
is
they
it?
Have limitations.
Lucifer, Leviathan. I can't think of all their names, but there's a
Belial.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, another thing too, I'm getting a question about here through email. When you can email the show to it, contact@lightingthevoid.com is, what is the difference? And I think this is a good question. What is the difference between invocation and evocation?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. Okay. So I can give you my definition from my experience. An invocation, it's really simple for me. You an invocation is an invitation. You're inviting. An evocation is where you're forcing it to appear. You're forcing it. You're summoning it by force. Whether you're using the four primary elements or you're using powerful Hebrew God names, you're forcing the entity. Invocation, invitation. Evocation, forcing it. You invoke a deity. You invoke God. You invoke Odin, Thor, whatever. You evoke a lesser entity, a lesser spirit. But you can also invoke that lesser spirit too. That doesn't mean they'll come. But if you evoke something, it has to come. It's obligated to come because you're using powerful, whether it's God names from the Christian God, the Islamic God, or you're using names of its superior, Lucifer, Leviathan, Palamon, Belial, whatever. And then you control them, you evoke them by using the angels that correspond to each one of those demons. It's a big system. It's a lot.
How do they appear? Do they talk to you like inside your head? Can you physically see them? How do you know that the demon is there in your presence?
Yeah. Okay. That's a great question. I've had one situation where I was in a dark room. I created a circle. I made the circle myself and I used God names in Hebrew and I evoked Palamon. And it was completely dark. I had one candle lit. That's all I wanted, one black candle lit. And I admit I put a little bit of my blood on the candle and on the wick of the candle to burn it.
Mm.
So when I looked into the pitch darkness, I saw a figure, but it looked like it was pixelated. You know, when you look on television or your TV is going out, your satellite, whatever, it's kind of pixel. That's what it looked like. It looked like it was pixelated. And it was trying to form, it was trying to manifest, and then it was gone. But a lot of times you can feel it. Your body reacts to it. Almost the same way if you're on a paranormal investigation and the hair sticks up, you get the goosebumps, the temperature changes, stuff like that happens. The temperature changed, my hair stood up, it got really cold in the room, and you could just feel all eyes on you.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I was reading Gordon White's book on chaos magic, the Chaos Protocols. And he does an invocation to Lucifer, right? For certain, things in his life. And he, you know, gives out all the different names for Lucifer and it's the crossroads ritual. You know, the crossroads ritual is like the big ritual that everybody's kind of afraid of that talks about in the music industry and stuff, but it's right.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like right there in the book too. The crossroads is a symbol for, you know, the crossroads into the spirit realm. That's why it's used. So, but he says the same thing, like that you go back to the crossroads and you do this invocation and you do it each night and you make sure that you're alone. But he doesn't explain how, but he said when Lucifer or the spirit shows up, that there is absolutely no doubt that he's there, you know, when he finally shows up. How does that not scare the hell out of you, though?
Too, from the voodoo pantheon. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, Papa Legba? Is that what you said?
Yes, I've worked with Papa Legba from the voodoo pantheon, too. Papa Legba is a very powerful spirit. And in a lot of voodoo houses and voodoo circles, he's considered the voodoo Jesus. Some people consider him the voodoo devil, but no, Papa Legba's not a devil. He's not evil. But yeah, the crossroads, Hecate, Papa Legba, all those crossroads spirits, Lucifer, even, they're all associated with that. And the crossroads, yes, is a very, very powerful place. Very powerful place.
How does that not scare the hell out of you, though? It would me. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't know why.
Yeah,
but it would
I mean,
be.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that something wouldn't, but I guess because, you know, I started at such a young age that I'm just used to it. That's the only answer I can give you.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm going through like some of these images in my head. I know for a fact, if I walked out to the crossroads in the dark, the first night I might be able to handle it, but night two, three, I'd start get the creepy eebies, you know?
Yeah.
how, I guess let's kind of swing this towards a positive light here. What do you use? Like, what's a go-to thing for you for protection? If you don't mind talking, I mean, I'm sure you have different things, but a lot of people want to know about that too. They want to know, how do I psychically protect myself?
Absolutely. Ancestors, you know, before I do a lot of working, I go to my ancestor altar and I ask them to be with me and to protect me and to shield me. I mean, they're always your first defense. They're always going to be there for you before anyone. And then, you know, you can do some cleansing baths, cleansing prayers, Psalms out of the Bible, invoking archangels, stuff like that. Wear a piece of jewelry that's been blessed, you know, whether it's a pentacle or a crucifix, a ring, whatever. A tiger's eye is great. You know, if you bless it yourself, you know how to do it, that's fine. Holy water is great. It, you know, it depends on your spiritual path too.
It seems like you're using a lot of different spiritual paths though, right? You don't,
yeah,
because you grew up with the occult, which is kind of different than a lot of people. A lot of people don't grow up with this in their family. They grow up in some type of religion or no religion at all, but to grow up in occult practices is a little different. Did people kind of mess with you when you were a kid or say you were weird?
Oh yeah. Well, man, especially when I got to high school, you know, I knew that it was frowned upon by mainstream society, but I would bring some of my books to school during like study hall and I would read it and stuff. Oh, it didn't take long before I was dubbed a Satanist, a worshiping the devil. Actually, as they say in the South, you damn devil worshiper.
Yeah, right. Well, what part of the South? I'm from Arkansas. What part of the South are you from?
I am in Tallahassee, Florida, the capital.
Oh, I love Florida. Florida. You're in a good place right now, actually. I think
I am. Yeah. It's pretty here. And we actually do get cold weather here, believe it or not.
Well, I just got back from Florida around New Year's time. From Tampa to Panama. I went through a little town called Blountstown. I'm sure you're familiar with that. It's right outside of Tallahassee.
Blountstown?
Yeah. Is it Blountstown or Blountstown? Yeah.
I know exactly where that's at. That's about 45 minutes from me.
That's a creepy place, man. That place looks like something that came out of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
It's a very, very old town. Very old town. Yeah. Been there a long time.
So
used to be a Muscogee Creek town before Europeans moved there. It was a Muscogee Creek town. That's another thing. I trained for 7 years under a Muscogee Creek medicine man.
Really?
Yeah. 7 years.
So, what all have you been trained up in? It sounds like you got trained up in a lot of different things.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm 45 years old. I've done Golden Dawn, Solomonic magic, all that Galatia stuff, Wicca, done that. Straga, Italian folk magic. My God, I don't know, man.
Sounds like a little bit of voodoo and shamanism a little bit too, huh?
Voodoo. In fact, I have a voodoo temple in my backyard. I have a Potomitan where I dance around it and I call the spirits, the Gede, you know, Balan Samde, Manan Bridget, Papa Legba, Bondai, you know, all the Loa to come down. And, you know, I sometimes I'll interact with them before I do a major working too, to get their protection as well. So yeah, I've pretty extensive, I guess.
What's your viewpoint on curses? Now, this is a touchy subject because
sure.
Do you consider it ever, I guess, the right thing to do or I don't know, justifiable, let's say, to ever curse a person?
Sometimes it's the only thing you can do. I don't have anything against curses. I think that a person should wait 3, maybe 4 days to see how they feel, not just jump the gun and start slinging curses out. depends on what has happened. If someone has harmed a family member, or you know is going to harm a family member in a horrible way, then I think a curse is justified. I usually try to bind someone first, so that they cannot act, so that they cannot create harm. You know, I have all my defenses up, but yeah, binding is usually my first go-to. But sometimes curses are absolutely necessary. Blessings are necessary. Curses are sometimes necessary. That's my feeling on it.
Yeah, like if it's the only line of defense that you have for somebody. I've thought about this too, because I used to tell everybody, like, no, I would never curse anybody. But realistically, even if you don't practice magic and you're full of emotion and you're pacing back and forth mm-hmm. in your bedroom and you're like, I wish this person would get hit by a car. I freaking hate them. But you're cursing that person, you know?
Yes, essentially. Because your emotion is energy, and a lot of magical and occult practice, emotion has to go into it. That feeds it. That's fuel.
It's like the amplifier.
So it definitely amplifies it. If I'm doing a blessing, if I'm doing something just to gain money, or if I'm going to curse someone, emotion needs to be a big part of what you're doing.
What I heard from more than one person actually about this is that if magicians were so magical, if they were so powerful, why do, this is a good question, but I got an answer for it. I'm just curious about what you're going to say. Why wouldn't they be rich and wealthy and have everything that they wanted and super successful and have Lamborghinis? This is what you hear, right? If they're really a magician, why don't they have a big fat bank account?
Well, for me, it's not... not from lack of trying. I've been able to manifest a lot of things, but I have not been able to manifest winning the lottery. Now I've manifested $500-$600, you know, and I've had that happen, you know, within 5-6 hours or a day later. But as far as the lottery, no, I've never been able to do that.
Yeah. It's funny because, what I've found into when I started working with things is, that if you like cast for something that doesn't matter, it's kind of like when you first start training in this stuff, as Freddie Xavier talked mm-hmm. about this on his YouTube channel, like everybody do a sigil for like an orange ball or something that doesn't even matter. And you could easily let it go.
Right.
So you do a ritual, you easily let it go to the point of forgetting about it. Then it comes around easily for some reason. But when it's something that you really want, and you can't let it go. Like you can't just let the universe do its thing. It has a hard time manifesting for some reason.
Yeah.
That's the tricky part about it, I think.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I mean, I have gotten money using magic, but never won the lottery using magic. So.
Well, we're all going to keep trying that one. For sure.
I will do the magic, create the sigils, whatever, put everything, my emotion, my whole mind, all my attention into it. Then I will leave the room, let it go, forget about it, do something else.
That's fascinating too. All right. So I'm going to get back into this, Jen. I just wanted to pick your brain about a couple of things. So here's the thing when it comes to Jen. I've never been afraid of, just between you and me and the audience here, I've never been afraid of demons or anything like that. But when I heard Nineveh Shadrach talking about just how powerful the jinn are, about some of the things that they're capable of in the physical realm, it really kind of mm-hmm. started freaking me out. Some of the things that they can do as far as physically, how they can physically interact with the physical world, and some of the paranormal experiences I've heard people talk about, the entities they've seen, where people have seen stuff just spontaneously combust and all kinds of stuff. It started making a lot of sense to me, right? That these things have been around since the beginning of time. How many of them are there? I know you probably don't know the exact answer, but are they like everywhere? Are they few and far between? I mean, just what are they in the same hierarchies as angels? I don't know much about the jinn, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a type of hierarchy system. There's not a lot known about that hierarchy system, but they do have kings. But there is a hierarchy system, and there is multitudes of them, millions of them, you know. But they live in a parallel universe, and for whatever reason, they're able to cross back and forth, you know, in between theirs and ours, whereas it would be damn near impossible for us to do that. And yeah, a lot of people are deathly afraid of djinn as opposed to goetic spirits. I had a situation one time where a couple was being harassed by one, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to exorcise it. I've never been able to exorcise one. A demon, sure. An angel, yeah. Not a djinn. Basically, what this djinn wanted was it was a young couple. They just moved into this house, and all it wanted was a blueberry bush planted in the backyard. That's it. So we did that. They never had any issues from him again.
Really? How did you know that that's all it wanted? How did you come to know?
So what I did, sure. What I did was I got into a trance state. I communed with my djinn, and my djinn communed with him. He basically told me what he wanted. And, you know, at first it seemed a little silly, but okay. So we did it, and they're fine even to this day. And this was 6 years ago.
That's weird. Like, why wouldn't care about a blueberry bush? If these things are thousands of years old, there's probably some type of sentimental thing for it there, maybe.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, how do you, so if you say you can feel the presence of spirits and stuff, like, I know it's probably hard to explain, but how do you feel? Like, if you, let's say you walked into my studio or something and I had some kind of spirit in there, how would you be able to tell that it's here? Could you just feel it? Could you hear it? Is it the communication you have with your djinn?
Yeah, well, the obviously, you know, having a djinn, you know, with me helps. You know, that helps a lot. He will sometimes deliver to me, you know, mentally. There's, you know, more than just us here, but usually my body reacts first. I can feel it in my gut. And yeah, like you said, it's hard to describe. I can feel it in my gut. Definitely my mind starts wondering, okay, somebody's watching me. It feels crowded in here. There's more than just us. It's hard to explain, but you can feel it internally.
You start getting that creepy vibe.
That probably doesn't help at all, does it?
Well, no, I get the creepy vibes. Like when I know something's up, like but what happens to me is I'll say, man, I feel like something's watching me. Like, It's hard to explain. I'll feel that. And then something happens. Something weird always happens.
Yeah.
Like, I'll see something move out of the corner of my eye, or something in my house will move, or, you know, then I know that, okay, like, I done drug something in here I need to clean out, or something, you know.
Yeah, you definitely can feel eyes on you, for sure.
I talked to Stephen.
In fact, there's a haunted... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
There is a house. Have you heard of the Monroe House?
No.
It's, I can't remember what state it's in, but it's a fairly famous haunted place. And there is an entity there. A friend of mine is a paranormal investigator, and he has been there, and he's actually seen it. And he says that it's non-human. But with everything in him, he believes it is not a demon. So I said, well, brother, it's probably a djinn. So he wants me to go with him in November to check that out.
Yeah. Well, you should let me know here. We got to take our last break, but you should let me know how that goes. We'll For sure. get into your questions, and the phone lines, they're still open too, guys. If you want to ask Ken a question, it's 1-800-588-0335. We'll be right back. Stay with us. More Lighting the Void coming up. All right, welcome back to Lighting the Void. Tonight we're discussing Jinn, exorcism, the occult, with our guest Ken Allen. You can check out his podcast. It's called The Wizard's Table. It comes on at 6. Now, does that come on at 6 Pacific or Central Time, Eastern Time, every other Saturday?
6 p.m. Eastern.
6 p.m. Eastern, okay. And that's on the RU Media Network as well?
That's right.
Yeah, you guys can check out. I'm sure like people want to hear your stories. Like I would think what I'm most interested in, because I'm fascinated with exorcisms. I've had people ask me to do things like that too, because I practice like Rosicrucian and Golden Dawn magic. But I just out of respect, like I don't do it. I don't want to get involved with it. I don't think I'm ready for it, because I need to learn how to identify that stuff. Like I'm not an advanced magician. I don't claim to be an adept or anything like that. I just really love to study it too, you know.
And you have to be able to discern whether or not you're actually dealing with something supernatural, or if the person is suffering from mental health issues. Definitely want to make sure. Because you don't want to take somebody that's suffering from mental health issues and sit them down and start doing these things. Now, I always take people with me. I always take a team with me. I have someone who is a trained psychologist, and sometimes I take a first responder.
So you probably can't use any names or anything, but can you tell me, like, walk me through kind of like an exorcism maybe that you did on a person where you literally knew that it was a demon from the jump? And kind of walk me through it. You don't have to take me through the whole ritual or everything, but just kind of take us through that.
Yeah, I'll just give you kind of the highlight. So we had this one lady, who's about 4 hours from here. And her daughter, it was actually her daughter who called me. So yeah, I got my small team together and we went through her, we wanted to find out about her mental health issues, if there was any. Nothing like that. Everything was fine. She was basically being tormented in the middle of the night. She was waking up with her clothes ripped off of her, scratches all over her, bruises, pieces of her hair had been pulled out in the middle of the night, things like that.
Oh my God.
And apparently it just progressed to the point where she was just attacking people and speaking in different languages and stuff like that. So, I pulled out, a rosary that was blessed, holy water that was blessed, religious icons, the Virgin Mary, Saint Joseph, and of course, a picture of Christ and Saint Benedict medals. We put her in a chair. We had her sit down in a chair. She was fine at first. And then we started praying the Lord's Prayer. And I like to pray the Lord's Prayer in Latin. And that's when everything really started to manifest. That's when she started to speak in Latin and started cussing and spitting at everyone. And her face started to contort and her arms was waving back and forth rapidly. And then we got the holy water. We put some holy water. I put some holy water on her forehead, on her lips, and then on her breast area just to cover those. Those are some of the entry points for a lot of spirits. And, it was pretty bad. The chair was bouncing and it was one of those metal folding chairs. It was bouncing. And then she threw up what appeared to be a seaweed like substance, but there was none of the spinning of the head and none of that Linda Blair stuff. I've never seen anything like that.
Did it speak?
But Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh yeah. It was deep guttural. It was speaking in Latin and sometimes it would speak in English, and it was just cussing and saying really, really terrible things, really terrible things. Hmm. We worked on her for 4 hours straight. Now, what people need to realize is sometimes an exorcism can last hours. It can last days. It can last weeks, months, or it can even last years. You don't go in there in 30 minutes, it's done, or an hour, it's done. But this particular instance, it was 4 hours. nonstop. And I guess we got lucky. I had a lady come to me one time that had a horrible attachment. She actually came to my voodoo temple. And I used a combination of voodoo and Native American techniques to get the spirit off of her. She lived about 6 hours away. And me and my apprentice worked on her for several hours. And we finally got it off of her. Now, I actually was able to see the entity. My apprentice couldn't see it. But I was actually able to see it. Whatever it was female. It was non-human. And it looked as if it was covered in a black, oily sludge. And it had these very long tentacle like arms, and it was waving them back and forth, and I was dislodging it at this point. I was singing very powerful medicine songs using a combination of Catholicism, voodoo, and Native American spiritual medicine songs to get this entity out of this woman. She wasn't fully possessed at this point, but she had a heavy, heavy attachment.
Wow. And so does the demon fight back? Like, how do you know that it's working when it really starts getting angry with you or fighting? Or?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you are, in my case, because of the techniques I use, if I'm saying a certain prayer or a certain phrase from a psalm or a certain command, invoking either, you know, the Christian God or a voodoo loa like Legba or Baron Samedi, or a Native American song, be it, you know, Muscogee or Lakota, because I can use both Muscogee and Lakota songs. If at any point in time during any of those songs or phrases, it really starts to act up, then I'm like, okay, now I'm pushing its buttons. That's what I need to repeat periodically.
You know, the only time that actually freaked me out is when I was back at the shack. I was doing cleansing, and I had something hiss at me. And this is when I was listening to Frater Xavier's YouTube channels, and he would say, because I started learning about hoodoo, uncrossings, and things like that. And he would say, like, that the way you can tell that it's working is if you start getting that. Even if you're, like, exercising yourself, right, if you're doing an uncrossing ritual or whatever, you would start getting angry, or you would start laughing at yourself. Or if you were cleansing something out that wasn't inside you, maybe a room or something, that you could tell that it was getting mad. And I actually had something hiss at me once, and man, it freaked me out. It really did. Like, I was like, that's kind of when I started realizing how real this was, that this wasn't just like the movie Constantine. I mean, it kind of was, but it wasn't like, you know, it was real. Because I was like, damn, that sounded like a cat hissed at me. I don't have a cat out here. You know?
Absolutely. The hissing is not uncommon. Hissing happens, in a, you know, so-called empty room. Hissing happens. Growling sometimes happens. Knockings will happen sometimes in increments of three.
Oh, I was just going to ask you that. Okay. Here's the thing that has happened to me a lot in my life. And I talked to Dan Lopez about this too. I hear three distinct knocks on the door, like bang, 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 right? The kind of knock, this always happens to me, like when I'm asleep too. But you know how when someone knocks on your door and it wakes you up?
Yeah.
That's how loud it is.
Yeah.
It's loud enough to wake you up.
It's pretty loud.
But you go to the door and nobody's there.
Yeah, there's a few theories about the knocking on. It's the same with the scratches, three scratches, three knocks, whatever. A few theories. Well, the most popular theory is that it's mocking the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. That's why it does things in threes. That, you know, usually it's a non-human spirit, a demon, and three knocks, three scratches, mocking the Trinity. A lot of times it happens to a lot of people at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know what time you're experiencing this, but
I've had it happen to me at night. I've had it happen to me during the day when I've fallen asleep and taken a nap like two or three times. Mm-hmm. Dan talked about one time that, it happened to him. Like the third time it happened, he woke up and saw the door actually move. And I was thinking, okay, well, you know, when you're in the hypnagogic state, you're in between worlds basically. So when you're waking up, is this thing trying to cross over, or is it trying to get into your house or your space per se? Right? I don't know, but people always ask me, can things come into your dreams? And I would say absolutely that there are spirits and things like that trying to get into the physical realm. And I think one way that they do that is through dreams and hypnagogic states and things like that.
Absolutely. Most definitely. That state of being half asleep, half awake. Yes, I have felt things. I've seen things. And I've had some of the most incredible ideas, successful ideas come to my mind in that state. So that's a powerful state. Like you said, it's like being in between worlds. It's almost a portal. And speaking of portals, okay, Ouija boards. I have a Ouija board, and yes, I use it. You probably knew I was going to say that, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But sure, they can be dangerous, absolutely. But then again, so can a spirit box. So can a digital recorder. Anytime you're seeking something out from the other side, seeking something out across the veil, even if you're just lighting a candle and speaking to your ancestors, something can answer your call. Doesn't matter if you're using a Ouija board. Doesn't matter if you're using electronic equipment. Something can answer that call. The Ouija board, a candle, the spirit box, those things can be equally dangerous. They can be equally beneficial. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I've never really messed with a Ouija board too much. Not because I'm afraid of it. I just have never really, I've gotten maybe one or two chances in my life to actually intervene with that. But I did learn quite a bit about scrying, and kind of me and another guy developed a tool called what we call the altar box. And it's basically an altar suitcase that folds out to where you have like a universal floor. It's got Metatron's cube on it, but it also has a black mirror that mm-hmm. flips around to a chalkboard on one side too, if you want to use sigils or anything like that, or hoodoo stuff.
Very nice.
Pretty cool.
Very yeah. nice. Yes. I use a black mirror myself as well. Yeah. I have a triangle of manifestation that if I'm evoking a goetic spirit, a demon, I have a black mirror in the center of that. So yeah, black mirror scrying is powerful stuff.
Yeah, I did one. I did a one on Halloween night that kind of was all about facing my fears, and it kind of really got heavy. But let me get to some of these questions here that I got. All right. So going back to the djinn, like, do you know the names of any of the djinn besides the one that you're with? Like, do you know there any names of djinn?
Yeah. There's a few. First of all, my djinn's name, I'm not really supposed to reveal his name, but there are some elder djinn, like kings, for example, Nazir. He's a king. Uh-huh. Kamtam is a king. Kaswarach is a king. Taichal is also a king. So those are four of the kings, four of the djinn kings.
And I know why you don't want to say your djinn's name too, because you don't want everybody's energy thinking about it. I know why you don't want
absolutely.
To say it. It's not because people are absolutely. Like, oh, he's making it up. It's because it's the second people start thinking about it. Now you got all this astral energy onto something that's personal to you. So I get that.
That's right. Because I've had other people interview me and ask me the name of my djinn, and I refuse. I won't do it. I won't tell it.
Isn't that funny? Too. This is like, if you study this stuff or ever practice it, you start realizing that the reason why you see that sign of Harpocrates, where they show, the finger over the mouth, right? The whole thing about mm-hmm. that to keep things hermetically sealed. It's not because you're trying to keep a big secret from people. It's because the second everybody's energy gets involved in this astral realm, their thoughts, people just don't. What I've always told everybody on this show is people just don't know how powerful their mind and how truly powerful they are. And especially
the mind
as a collective.
Is extremely powerful. Yes.
So
I mean, it's your first tool in magic. It's your first tool in sorcery. If you walk an occult path, if you practice the occult in any way, shape, or form, the mind is the first thing. And you need to train your mind, too, because some of the stuff can make you go crazy. It can make you mad, especially when you start working with goetic spirits.
Why do you think that happens? Because it forces you to deal with your own shadow, or is it because they play mental games with you?
I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah, you're dealing with your shadow self, and a lot of them are tricksters. But I have found that throughout the years of working with a lot of these goetic spirits, that they are not absolute evil. Some of them just want to live. They just want to exist. Some of them could care less about what we do.
Don't some of them get mad, though, if you actually invoke them? Like, they get angry because you invoke them?
There are some that there are some that do not like to be invoked or evoked. They don't want to be evoked.
Yeah.
And there's some that just, you know, get agitated if you invoke them. But evocation, oh yeah, they get very angry.
So I imagine that since you're doing Solomonic magic, that maybe you use the floor or you use a triangle to hold the spirit in. Is that what you do?
Yeah. Yeah. I use a circle, Solomonic circle, mm-hmm. and I use a triangle of manifestation.
Interesting. It's so interesting to me that sacred geometry, like these basic geometric shapes, the circle, the triangle, the square, these uh-huh. things are the most, I mean, the some of the most powerful things in magic. It's
they like,
are. It's the biggest archetypes of the universe. I think if there's anything more powerful than jinn or angels, it would be, and I know this sounds weird, but it would be basic geometrical shapes, you know?
Yeah, right. Now, I'll tell you something else. A lot of people might think I'm crazy and they might laugh at me, especially those who are well-schooled in occultism, the Necronomicon. The Necronomicon.
There are people who say
actually
that doesn't even exist, though. That's like a made-up thing. But I'll let you speak on it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you use it in a chaos magic context, it will work. It will work.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
chaos magic context is like
you understand why. Yeah,
you could use a comic book character archetype in chaos magic if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and people have. I mean, I'm not going to try to evoke Mickey Mouse. That's just a little too silly for me. But I have done little spells in the Necronomicon, and I have seen results.
If I could do that, if I could evoke like characters like that, I would have just evoke Jessica Rabbit. From Roger Rabbit. That's probably what I would do. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I know that stuff's real because what's his name? Oh man, I can't think of his name. Famous comic book writer. He talked about that. He talked about how he wrote The Invisibles, Grant Morrison, that's who it is. He wrote The Invisibles, okay. Which is an awesome comic, by the way. It's full of occult stuff. But he literally turned all his characters, he made a character of himself into a hyper sigil into that comic book. And the things that he wrote about himself into that comic book started happening to him in his life. Like just those, the girlfriend that he said he wanted to have, he wasn't very specific, but he had like three girls that showed up in his life that look exactly like that comic book character. He had a thing in that comic book where he had something happen to his lungs shut down, and then not too long after that was released, he had like some kind of infection where his lungs collapsed or something, you know, and he started realizing that he was making hyper sigils and he was manifesting his reality by putting all this energy into this stuff.
Yeah. It works. You're working with energies. You're working with a lot of energy, powerful energy, different, intelligences and consciousnesses, you know, not to be stuck on the Goetia all night, but I do use a circle. I do use a triangle. Now, with Ouroboros, Stolas, and Bune, I do not, because I've been working with them for so long, and I do have a decent relationship with those.
Interesting.
Now, with the djinn, if I am going to, well, first of all, I have a djinn, so, you know, he kind of helps to protect me. He's gotten me into trouble, too, before, but most of the time he helps to protect me. So I've got that going for me. But when I work with the djinn, I don't use any kind of circles or triangles. I mean, they're djinn. You know, their power is a lot. Their power is far superior to a goetic spirit.
Well, you know what, man? I would like to, at some point, have you back and talk to you on the show again. I know we got to get out of here, but it's the first time I got to talk to you. But I really think that you know what you're doing. I think we could really get deeper into this, maybe in a future episode or something.
Absolutely. I would love to come back on. Just let me know when.
Sure. Sure. And you guys go check out his podcast. I want to make sure that I say it's The Wizard's Table, right?
Yes.
And
that's The Wizard's Table on
RU Media.
RU Media Network.
Yes. Yeah. 6 PM Eastern time every other Saturday. Guys, we got to get out of here. The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gables is up next. We'll see you guys tomorrow night. Same time, same channel, right here live on The Fringe FM. Good night, y'all. Sweet dreams. Man, there's so many questions, man, I wanted to ask you. It's just...